in an article where it seems like you're advocating for a maximalist approach to transparency that transcends even what the law requires. It's just interesting that in that same article, you on your own made the choice not to publish the contract.
I have gotten in trouble at news organizations for publishing source material directly. I've gotten in trouble many times over. I'm not about to...
The easy question is, would Wired block you from publishing the contract here? Would Wired say, no, you cannot do that?
Wired... I have no idea to have to talk to them again. They publicly disclose it right here.
If this counts as public disclosure with no tax forms published, then Brian Tyler Cohen counts as public disclosure when he refutes parts of the contract, right? Why would he be demanded to publish the contract, but Omidyar Network can just be taken at face value for a PR
statement?
Omidyar
Network is not a political group. Stephen, I think you're very confused. I'm Taylor Lorenz. I'm a journalist. I cover the content creator industry and online influence.
Okay. So obviously you've written... an article that's blown up quite a bit on the internet, caused a lot of people some grief, me included, okay, who are upset. And then obviously we got a lot of favorable coverage from...
You weren't in the program though, right? You weren't in the program.
I don't know. Was I in any of the documents? Maybe I was one of the dark no. money recipients, you know? No, I wasn't personally, but I would say I'm on the same team as a lot of those people. So one of the things that I'm kind of curious about, I guess the first question before we dive into it is one of the questions that's been posed a lot by me and other people, is why not ever publish any of the contracts themselves? Because it feels like, obviously, there have been a lot of creators now that have come out and responded saying that a lot of the claims weren't true. I think you've replied to them that the replies aren't necessarily rebuke anything you've said. But I'm curious, why not just publish like parts
of
the contract?
It's such a good question. Oh, it's such a good question. And it's something that I get all the time. You know, when I reported, for instance, on Mr. Beast's years ago, before all the Mr. Beast stuff came out publicly, I wrote a big cover story for the New York Times about Mr. Beast's labor practices and these really restrictive NDAs he was signing people to and some of the other stuff. And you heard the same thing from like, publish the contracts. And this is something I think people have gotten used to because of social media and because most of the sort of content that they're consuming is maybe through YouTube or through like social media content where there's this like receipts culture, right? Which is great in a lot of ways, where people are sort of showing evidence on screen as they're talking about things. So I wish I could publish like 100% of our reporting material. I feel that way about all of my stories. But we have sources. So in order to report this story out, and how I originally found out about the story is actually from people in the program themselves. So people in the program reaching out and being like, hey, I feel weird about this. I think you should write about it. Like, I'm part of this program, but I want to essentially like be a whistleblower and kind of like draw attention to some things that I have problems with in the program. So we have to protect these people's identities. And one thing that we heard from one of our sources is that the contracts themselves might be watermarked with weird spacing. And so there might be some identifiable things like that, which is something that's totally common, by the way. Like, companies do this all the time. They actually do this with internal emails as well. So, you know, whereas we used to get these things, especially in tech journalism, you'd like get these emails like, ooh, internal email from Meta, like here it is, screenshot. Now companies have gotten smart to that. Obviously, if you're a company, you want to know who's leaking your stuff. And so they'll put these weird little things in, like an extra space here or something here, that sort of differentiates each thing, each sort of like person's contract or person's email or whatever, to make it identifiable. So we just want to be really careful and protect our sources. That said, many people at Wired reviewed the contract. We had a lawyer go through it, of course. Like, you know, no one's disputing what's in this contract, and nobody has been able to disprove what we've reported on. So, you know, these creators that are like, well, that's a lie. You know, our contract doesn't say that. They also have not published the contract publicly, but what they could do, even if they didn't want to publish the contract publicly, is they could go to Wired and say, here's the real contract. It doesn't say what Taylor's claiming. And of course they haven't done that, because the contracts actually do say, you know, our story is factually correct. So I know that there's lots of misinformation about the story. And I do think people have taken, I think a lot of people also, because it's paywalled, are making a lot of like wild assumptions, like based on the story, you know, to sort of speculate on a lot of things. But I would encourage people to actually read the story, because it is pretty straightforward, where we're just reporting on sort of like what the contract says, if that makes sense. But that's why we can't just come on and not just, by the way, our reporting wasn't just based on the contract, right? We also had Zoom of recording of an entire Zoom call where all of this was discussed. We have screen recordings of all of the group chats where all of these influencers were discussing the contract and discussing the program and discussing the nature of the program. We have internal emails from the company about the contract and about the program. We have negotiation. We have copies of receipts of emails and text messages during the negotiation process. So we have a lot more than just the contract. And of course, we have the testimony of the people that are in the program themselves who have spoken to us. So we have a lot of reporting. But yeah, we unfortunately, that's how a lot of journalistic institutions are, where we are not like operating by the same principles as I think like the way the rest of the internet does. But I wish we could, because I totally understand people wanting to see the contract. And that's why I've encouraged these creators to share the contract. I think it would dispel a lot of misinformation on their part, on everything.
Gotcha. Okay, so here are a few questions. So the first question is, if you had to guess, how many of these contracts do you think you saw or got to read through?
A few. Yeah, a few. I mean, there's a few tiers of the program, right? Mm-hmm. So, and we talk about this. So we have contracts for multiple tiers. Mm-hmm. So most of our stories is focused around the highest tier paid, version.
Yeah, the 8,000 a month, whatever one. Yeah.
Yeah. But we've seen all the contracts, for the different tiers, and compared them as well.
Is it not trivial to just like open up two contracts and look at them side by side or overlay them to see if there is like weird spacing or watermarking that happens?
So there are slight differences, and that's, and also there's identifying info in some of them. So yeah, that is what sort of originally made us a little bit nervous.
Because for the identifying info or for slight differences, so oftentimes for journalistic outlets, rather than showing you an actual thing, they'll show you like a reconstruction. So this is really common when people are reporting on text messages, for instance. Yeah. You're not actually seeing a picture or a screenshot, but they can reconstruct the text in a program and then show you like what it would look like. Yeah. So I guess I feel like a lot of things that would be put to bed for people's questions about some of the claims in this story is like just a reproduction basically of some of the clauses.
I would love to do that. I actually have advocated this for a long time. And it's so funny because this is something that people got really mad at me for previously when I said, like, I had a previous story about text messages and I was saying, why don't we just write the text messages? And we do in the story, right? We do reproduce the text messages in the sense that we're quoting directly from the text messages in our story. Mm-hmm. So there is that. But I agree. I think it would be great. Unfortunately, we're not able to do that for whatever, this is ultimately editorial judgments. There's reasons why they don't show source material. But I agree. I would love that. I think honestly, the burden of proof is on the content creators. Like, they have not been able to provide a single copy of any contract that refutes our reporting. But yeah, I mean, I'm all for transparency. I don't know if you remember my
there's a real quick thing. So I feel like in terms of burden of proof, assuming that there's a standard NDA clause on any of these, you're not going to get in trouble personally if you publish any of these contracts, but the content creator themselves would probably have to be released from an NDA if they signed a contract. So they would be in trouble.
Well, Brian Tyler Cohen is in charge of it. Like, Brian Tyler Cohen and these other creators, some of them are all stakeholders in Chorus. Uh-huh. So they continue to say that this is a public program. So, they're free. If they feel that we are not representing the contracts correctly, put them online and let people decide. But so far they have not been able to disprove that.
Standard though, that like if anybody writes a story or makes a claim about a particular company's contract, then that company is always forced to publish their contract to disprove
the
claims?
They could just reach out to Wired and say, hey, you guys misrepresented this, XYZ, and Wired obviously has the contracts, right? So they don't have to do it publicly. They can do it behind the scenes. But they haven't done that either. And so I think that's the thing, is that they have just been unable to refute any of the facts of our story. And I understand, like, it's frustrating for them, but the bits of information that have come out, rather, have confirmed our reporting. But yeah, I mean, if they aren't going to do it privately and they aren't going to do it publicly, I don't know what else to tell them.
But when you say they aren't going to do it publicly, I feel like a lot of creators have come out and have like There have been several claims, I think, that have been explicitly refuted by Brian Tyler Cohen, by David Pakman.
Well, they can refute them, but they have no proof to refute. So they can go online every day and say that the sky is purple, you know, or whatever they want to say. Mm-hmm. But we deal in facts here. And so we are dealing with the facts of our reporting and the facts of our source material. And so if they provide counter, you know, if they can debunk something, or they could say, hey, that's not what this says, here's what it says. Of course, sure, Wired is happy to look at that. But like, if I say you have not been able to do that.
Let's say that I say that you wrote, I don't know if you're formally hired by Wired or if you do freelance, but like if I were to make the claim, oh, Taylor has a contract with Wired and they have a clause saying that anytime Taylor publishes, she has to use the word and 47 times in her story. Now you need to disprove that. How would you even disprove that claim? Would you just have to publish your entire employment contract? Like, how would you disprove the claim that there's not a secrecy clause, or disprove a claim that there's not like content direction given by the company? I don't even know how you would begin to disprove that claim beyond like publishing the entire contract.
What are you talking about? Wired has lawyers. They have people that reviewed the contract. And if these content creators want to dispute anything in our story, they can reach out and they can say, hey, here's the proof that shows that this is false. Mm-hmm. But so far, they have not provided any proof that shows that our reporting is false. So I welcome them reaching out and showing proof that our reporting is false, but they have not done that. They have not done that publicly, and they have not done that directly, in the sense that they have not proven anything false. And so I just don't know what to tell these people, other than this is months of reporting. We have, in addition to the contract, all of these other documents that back up the facts of the contract. And that's why ultimately there are no corrections on the story. Now, is there a lot of false stuff around the story that people have taken our story and sort of speculated on things? Certainly. And I hope that we can get into sort of debunking some of that. But in terms of the facts of the story, the facts of the story remain. And I think you'll note too, I don't know if you go by Destiny or Stephen on stream, but Stephen, okay, sorry. You know, one thing that they've attempted to do, you know, since this has come out, a bunch of nonsense, right? Of course, they're going to make it all, like, they're going to start conspiracy theories about me and stuff. But one thing that they've done repeatedly is make this claim, well, Chorus is public. Chorus is public. So we've always been able to talk about Chorus. Here's the website. Here's whatever. No one is disputing that, right? Chorus, I myself have written about Chorus publicly before. There's an entire New York Times story by Ken Bensinger about Chorus that's public. Mm-hmm. So no one's disputing that Chorus is public. The unreported part and the stuff that our story focuses on is this funding system. And so that was the non-public part. And I think that that is something to focus on. I think, look, if you want to debate the ethics of dark money, there is a debate around that. Some liberals feel that we should use dark money. Some liberals argue against it. Like, that, you know, that is a debate. But I think what most people would agree on, if you ask the public, and certainly this is what I think, like, you know, any sort of ethical expert would say as well, is that disclosure is really important. And if you are if you are presenting yourself as a journalist online, which several of these content creators are presenting themselves as news sources or journalists, that you should be public about being part of a politically driven funding program, because that's just valuable for your audience to know. Just the way that, you know, Stephen, if you were taking tens of thousands of dollars from some, I don't know, political effort or something, like, even if you say, look, they never gave us talking points, I don't have to disclose. You're right. You don't have to disclose legally. There's no legal reason that you have to disclose. But, you know, Is it good for transparency to have this sort of, you know, non-public money like flowing around our political media environment? I don't think it is. And so that is how some of these content creators felt as well. And that is part of why they reached out to us, is because they didn't feel comfortable. They signed the contract, but they didn't feel comfortable with certain things within it. And so... Anyway, and I'm very surprised, by the way, total side note, that they didn't preempt my story and just do some puff piece about, we're excited to announce some funding program, because it would have completely thwarted our story, but they didn't do that. I don't know why.
Sure. So, I mean, there's a separate discussion to be had about disclosure. I think my biggest issue is I feel like selective disclosure is worse than no disclosure, as in if only some people are forced to disclose then and others aren't. I think that's not good. So I feel like the push should be towards changing the legal framework around what the reporting requirements are. Otherwise, you're just like basically playing from behind, because obviously like conservatives or other movements don't have to do any of this.
But 100%. Okay, yeah, I guess, of course.
Circling back on the I guess like a couple questions just to nail down something. So the first thing is, you said nobody from Chorus or from the 1630 Fund or anybody associated with this, nobody has reached out to you or Wire personally to have a conversation.
Not to me personally. They've reached out to Wired, but they've been unable to provide any facts that dispute our story. They've been unable to provide any evidence that disputes the fact of our story. But okay, they've certainly responded. We incorporated their request for comment. I tried to reach them for weeks, right? And so as soon as we published the story, they gave us comment finally, and we incorporated that comment into the story, which is obviously something we would always want to do. We tried to do that before publication.
Gotcha. And then second part of that. So before this story went live, you're saying that you provided like full copies of the contracts to Wired's, I guess, legal team in order for them to go through to make sure that the claims in the articles comported with what they saw in the contracts?
Of course. Yes, of course.
Okay. So I guess a couple clauses, because some people have released like parts of the contracts publicly that they've gone over. And maybe,
I saw it's like some on Instagram or some video, a girl
on
had
TikTok
it
and her. Reels and everything else. Yeah. So obviously, I'm not privy to the entire thing at this point, so I can't speak to any particular clauses. So I'm curious if there are other things that you saw, because there were some things that just didn't seem to be based on the things that I was reading. One of the big claims I think that was made in the article was the idea that you had to funnel all of your independent contacts through Chorus if you're going to arrange for like a meeting.
You had to loop them in. So you have to loop them in. So I think one thing that's interesting in that video that girl made, mm-hmm. sort of disproving thing, number one, the email that she shows where she's reaching out to someone directly is from June 2nd, mm-hmm. before the program even began. So it doesn't disprove anything. Now, you don't, like, it, according to the contract, you were supposed to use Chorus Newsroom to book engagements. Chorus Newsroom is this like internal tool or whatever. Mm-hmm. That just means that you're supposed to use that for booking things with lawmakers. They want you to loop them in on things. That doesn't mean that they have like approval or disapproval or whatever. It just means that you're looping them in.
And so wait, why not? Because I'm curious, because I've signed a lot of these contracts. My background is in pro gaming, and I've signed a lot of influencer mm-hmm. contracts. I've seen a lot of contracts. The language in the article was that creators in the program must funnel all bookings with lawmakers and political leaders through Chorus. That doesn't sound like looped in. That sounds like you're basically handing over your political contacts to Chorus for them to
You are handing over your contacts, and that's what I think some creators were concerned about.
Well, but then you're also not just handing them over, but that like they have to then set up all of the meetings and arrangements. Like if you're funneling something through somebody, you're not just looping them in on an email.
Right, you're doing it through Chorus Newsroom, right? Mm-hmm. You're doing it through their systems. And I just want to state, we don't, you know, we're not making the claim that they blocked anyone from interviewing anyone, but I think this became
a concern.
But
they would have the ability to, based on the article, right? They could block you from doing it.
We don't know if they would or wouldn't do that. But I think the issue that creators expressed
I'm just trying to clarify, because there's a big claim in the article. Yeah. Not would, but they could. If you have to funnel it through them, it seems to imply that they could block you from doing some content if you independently organized it, no?
I mean, I don't know their systems, and I don't know if they would do that. I don't know. We didn't talk to anybody that had that problem. But the problem that they're, the reason I think you're missing why creators had a problem with that clause, and creators that we spoke to had a problem with that clause, Stephen, mm-hmm. because there's increasingly this problem really since the Democrats lost, but even through the election last year, where there's these sort of middleman type organizations that hoover up a lot of contact details and kind of insert themselves as middleman and get in between creators establishing these more direct relationships with these lawmakers' offices. And so I think some creators bristled, given what had previously happened, with Chorus one time where they did this event, I can't remember, it was for some Trump address in Congress or something. They had a bunch of creators come, the creators created the content, and then creators felt like, well, Chorus is kind of taking credit for this content because they helped facilitate part of it, but I really want credit for the content. And so creators, at least in terms of like that funneling, the booking stuff, I think creators felt like, I don't want to have to use Chorus Newsroom for booking. I don't want to have to share information with the Chorus network. Like, I just want to maintain, you know, my own relationships, and I want to have this one-on-one relationship with the lawmaker. And now I have to be part of this bigger, you know, this bigger ecosystem where suddenly, for instance, a smaller creator gets a big interview. I think their fear, at least what they told us, is like, well, what if some other bigger person in the program then, once Chorus is looped in, does the interview and that person gets more views than me or whatever. So I think it's, they sort of just, they felt like they, you know, they wanted to maintain, they didn't want to have to book through, you know, these systems. And
yeah,
again,
I guess the thing was just based on the clause that I had seen released from that, the three parts of it, that idea of them being able to be a blocker or that you'd have to funnel anything through them. I didn't see that unless there was another part of the contract that didn't get released.
It says, right. And I think we can feel comfortable talking about exactly this specific language because one of the creators did post just this specific paragraph. So we can discuss the specific paragraph. But you know, it says book engagements. Chorus will provide contractors with access to the Chorus newsroom, which coordinates booking engagements, right? Contractor agrees to 1, use Chorus Newsroom to book engagements. 2, disclose to Chorus Newsroom personnel any engagements with government officials or other topics related to Chorus's policy agenda. Very broad. I asked Chorus what their policy agenda is. We still don't know. That contractor arranges through other means. 3, collaborate fully with Chorus regarding all such separately arranged agreements. So, you know, that to a lot of creators that spoke to us felt unnecessarily restrictive. They felt like, hey, I'm my own person. I'm fine being part of this incubator program, but why do I have to use their system to book all these things with lawmakers? Why do I have to loop them in on things and sort of funnel my contact stuff through them? I don't want to give them my contact info. I don't want to have to loop them in because I'm worried that someone else from the network is going to big dog me and, you know, take my interview or do something else. So
sure. I think there are two things going on here. So one is from somebody that's been part of organizations and part of agencies and part of a bunch of other things. I think it sounds like the goal of the newsroom basically was to connect creators in the program to, I guess, like
lawmakers paper, and things like
lawmakers,
that.
Policy, wonks, whatever, whoever else, right? Mm-hmm. So I feel like it makes sense that if I'm going to, let's say that I host an org and I have like 20 smaller creators and I bring them, you know, and I have them introduced to Bernie Sanders or whatever, if I have an arrangement set up to where after that meeting, Bernie Sanders' staff is going to get 17 emails from creators saying like, hey, we just met you. Can we also do our own one-on-one thing? That nobody would ever want to be a part of the newsroom stuff. Like you would never have access to any of that information because now every single time somebody's brought in. So it would make sense for newsroom related stuff that you would have to at the very least loop in or clue in Chorus with what's going on there, especially if they're the ones that have like reached out or made the contacts. I guess the only issue I have on the paragraph is that like that funnel like heavily implies that you, the way that the article is written is that Chorus can block you from doing your own independent media, I guess.
We don't make that claim in the story, and I'm sorry if the word funnel sort of implied that to you, but we don't make that claim. So, Stephen, you brought something up that I think is actually a really good point.
One more quick question on that. I'm sorry.
Oh,
and then you said, okay, because I don't know why, because you use loop Chorus in on the next sentence. Why not just say loop in? Because I've never in my life heard funnel. Funnel always means you're handing the reins over to somebody else, right? Like,
are using their program to book it, but sure.
You could also book it on your own, right? Because the next sentence you have is that you can loop Chorus in on any independently
organizing. Right, but you have to loop them in.
Yeah,
right.
But loop in is not funnel. Those are two really different things, right?
Okay. So
wait, do you acknowledge those are two really different things? To loop somebody in versus to funnel it through?
I personally don't interpret it that way, but if you want to interpret it that way, you're welcome to interpret it that way. I think, again, this is another reason why it would be really helpful for these creators that feel that maybe, hey, that word wasn't 100% right or something, that, you know, they can release the contracts and people can litigate the specific language. But I think what you brought up, which is the bigger point in all of this, is exactly the experience or the situation that you described, right? You have 17 creators. Oh, now these lawmakers are going to get 17 different emails, whatever. Maybe Chorus is providing this service where they're going to loop everyone in, or they're going to, you know, everyone's going to use this sort of one cohesive system and put it all sort of through one thing. So you're right? Like that there is an argument to be made for that type of system. And I've talked to a lot of lawmakers, especially on the Senate side, but also in the House, because the House has had a bunch of, you know, the comms group there has like been doing a bunch more with influencers. And they like working with these intermediary groups because they're like, oh, our lawmakers' offices are inundated with all these people. Mm-hmm. We want to hand it off to a gatekeeper who's a middleman who can figure it out, because we just learned that the YouTuber world existed yesterday.
Yeah.
So we can't evaluate all this stuff. We don't have the staff. So we like working with these third-party groups. So I think, like, Chorus especially has kind of become this like intermediary, again, helping these lawmakers. Like, some of these lawmakers have spoken very positively of that service. But to content creators, it feels to some of these content creators that spoke to us that they feel like, oh, well, now we have this new middleman to get through, where I used to just be able to go to directly to the lawmakers. And now I have to go through this middleman. And so there's been resentment towards not just Chorus. There's other groups that are seeking to, this is like a big new thing that all these groups are sort of seeking to do, is like establish themselves as middleman.
I'm curious, why do you think those creators then signed that contract?
Well, they signed the contract because they all have different reasons for signing the contract, but some of them disagree with things in the contract and tried to get out of different things in the contract.
But if you're signing a contract, there's going to be a give and take on any contract, right?
Sure.
Like if I get hired by a company to do some amount of work for $10,000 a month,
well, sure,
I'm going to hate
sure.
having to work, but I'm going to like getting the money,
trade-offs.
Right?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Well, you'd have to, ask them. But mm-hmm. I think it's interesting. I think what's interesting and like what interests me about that, like this clause that you're bringing up, is that especially if we want to like zoom out a little bit and look at the Democrats' media strategy, they've consistently relied on these kind of middleman groups. We had Village Marketing, of course, during the campaign, basically serving this very same purpose where they're sort of filtering creators, determining who gets access to lawmakers, et cetera, et cetera. And I totally understand from the lawmakers, feeling that that's valuable. But more recently, and I talked to one lawmaker actually it's been a couple months ago, it was the White House Correspondents' Weekend. And this representative was telling me, you know what? I'm beginning to be suspect about some of these groups because I've been hearing from these other content creators that I actually would have loved to work with that they haven't been able to get through the gates of these groups. And I feel like maybe now I'm cutting myself off from other opportunities. And so I don't understand
that because anybody can email. I'm pretty sure all these comps people are. I know this because I've talked to some of these people. The comps
anybody
people are on
can
Twitter.
Email,
anybody can email.
Course,
so I don't know how you could ever
get cut off.
But
they're inundated. And so they're not. What they mean is that these lawmakers, and especially the House, which is established a lot more like, because there's so many of them, mm-hmm. More of these sort of like middlemen, they just rely on the middlemen. So they're just like, you know what? We don't really take inbound. Now, a lot more lawmakers are more open, especially people like Ro Khanna and others. They are becoming more open where they're like, you know what? I might rely on this middleman for some stuff, but I'm also going to try to ensure that I hire staff that actually can evaluate these opportunities and even do more proactive opportunities to kind of develop our own direct relationship. And on the Senate mm-hmm. side, Cory Booker has really done this, where Cory Booker himself has become the kind of middleman. And Cory's office has done a lot, actually, to help educate other members on the Democrat side on the Senate of who content creators are, how to work with them, how to evaluate these opportunities. And Cory's office has created a lot of shared resources to try to help empower them so that they don't just have to rely on these like third-party companies, which also are making money, right? And mm-hmm. they don't have to like worry about that. So I think
one of the things, well, I guess when I look at this,
strategies evolve.
We keep using the word middleman, but like there's a value that these types of
course,
organizations
of course,
are providing
there is.
To both
yeah, yeah,
the lawmakers
undeniably.
And to the
sure.
streamers themselves. Yeah.
yeah
but it feels
yeah,
like
yeah.
when we talk about whether you want to say Lupin or Funnel or whatever, like it seems like we're talking about this as though it's almost like predatory or it's preventing people from doing some things. But the reality is that Chorus is just protecting the business that it's in of being able to form valuable
which
connections.
Totally from a business standpoint, I understand that. And from a business standpoint, they want to also capture, like what they also want to do is make sure that people aren't going off, that people are in this program, right? And that they're off capturing, like, you know, say you're in this program and you have these people making this content that ends up really successful, you know, the Chorus wants to capture that and be able to put that in reports and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I understand it. I think what I found so interesting about this specific thing is that there are all of these discussions right now happening on the House and Senate side about, because again, they've all sort of just discovered influencers like in the last 6 months of like, how should we handle this? Should we rely on these outside agencies? How much power should we give them? How, you know, who can we hire internally? Is it the digital team? Is it the comms people? Who, you know, a lot of requests come through the comms people, but the comms people really only deal with traditional media. And so that's what like Cory's team, especially has really on the Senate side, tried to kind of like educate people about. And I think on the House side, it's a little bit more of a free for all.
Yeah. So I understand all of that, I guess. I guess what I'm trying to say mm-hmm. is that I think that when you come up, when you read the article is almost completely or overwhelmingly negative in regards to Chorus and its place and the connection they have between the influencer and Congress. But Chorus in this way is just functioning as like the same type of talent agency or rep that exists in ubiquitously
it's
across every single agency.
It's interesting you bring up talent agencies and reps, mm-hmm. Stephen.
Yeah.
Because these content creators, many of them also have talent agencies and reps. And so one drama that Chorus got involved in months ago was actually relation to exactly what you're just describing, which I think is what you're going to say is like, this is what talent agencies and reps are doing. Like they have social good, you know, departments at WME or whatever, right? That can help set these things up. So Chorus, and not just Chorus, and we can use Chorus as like, you know, Chorus is an example of, there's also like, there's lots of other sort of like Chorus copycat type agencies that have cropped up.
Sure.
These talent agents and managers have become so livid with these middleman agencies because the middleman agent, and I just say middleman because they are, I should just say agencies, like, you know, the managers and agents are also middlemen, okay? It's middlemen against middlemen.
Sure.
But we have like these political groups where like, you know, Stewart, Brian, Tyler Cohen, like they're very much from the political world, the people that started Chorus. Mm-hmm. And then we have the entertainment world. And the entertainment world, they for a long time have already been in this space. And suddenly the political world is like, oh, this doesn't exist. We're going to set this thing up, right? We're going to serve this thing. And we already have these relationships with Congress people. So you're seeing a lot of clashing where the management companies and the talent agencies feel like, hey, how dare you go off and represent our creators? Only we represent our creators. And then also confusion on the booking side where they're like, well, I reached out to Chorus, but should I reach out to UTA? Should I reach out to what? Like, it's just absolute chaos. And I think
I feel like this is dramatically over-exaggerated. There should be no chaos here whatsoever. So I literally have signed with UTA in the past. Like, you know exactly, sure. When you're signing with agencies like this, the contract they're giving you generally gives them, if you're serious talent, they have the exclusive right to organize any type of paid sponsor activation, whatever type of
right.
event like that.
Right.
Stuff that Chorus or these other political organizations cover, there might be some ambiguity there onto whether or not that would come under my UTA contract. But if I'm big talent or if I'm medium-sized talent, of course, I'm just going to ask my UTA rep, right? I'm just going to shoot him an email or message him on whatever platform to say, hey, does this conflict with this contract? I don't know how this could be massive chaos.
So
chaos.
So first of all, you're talking about a talent agent contract, which is different, of course, than a management contract. What the chaos is that's happening is that many of these creators, especially if they're big creators, are signing up. They want to do political work. Some of these big creators, like, they're like, oh man, I do want to get more involved in politics. I hate that Trump won, right? Uh-huh. I do want to get more involved in politics. So they'll sign up with one of these third party things, sometimes not even getting paid, right? They're not even part of the paid Chorus program. Maybe they just signed up for Chorus because they want to do more stuff. And then the talent agents are coming in and being like, well, wait a minute. Like, we're the ones to negotiate deals. We're the ones that have the exclusive right to sort of like represent you and negotiate opportunities for you and things like that. And so there's just this tension, which has, by the way, it's funny. We can talk about how the right has resolved. Like, the right had a version of this also that they dealt with. But I think that it just shows that, like, there's just a lot of sort of kinks to work out in terms of streamlining this process. And as the Democrats work to leverage more content creators, I think that it's interesting for me as a journalist to write about these different strategies and the way that these things are evolving. And so that's why I'm interested in Chorus, and not just Chorus. Mm-hmm. I've reported on the other groups too, and I have another story coming out soon about a whole other similar group. But sure. They're all sort of jockeying for they're all jockeying for their own businesses and their own business interests, but mm-hmm. also the lawmakers and the Democratic lawmakers that I've spoken to are also trying to figure it out. And they are sort of getting their sea legs. And so mm-hmm. I think that covering this stuff is interesting. And if we want to look at the right, by example.
Well, before I guess we move on to that. So like, I agree with what you're saying there. But the article, in my mind, like, it just basically reads like a hit piece against Chorus. I don't see any of the redeeming or positive qualities. I think the only prescription I saw in the article when you quoted the whatever that person's name was basically that this mm-hmm. group just shouldn't exist at all. Like, no types of groups like this should exist at all.
A lot of these creators don't want any middlemen. So they don't want any middlemen.
But those creators don't need to have middlemen. They just don't sign with these groups, right? That's super
easy.
Well,
that creator has other middlemen. I mean, but again, this is just
them, but I mean, then why are they signing with them? They don't have to, unless they're being held at gunpoint to sign the contracts, right?
Yeah. I think the thing that struck to me, and this is not really what we're talking about here, but I think like the main crux of the article is not any of this stuff. Like, the main sort of thesis of the article is that they took undisclosed money. And to me, that is something that people have a right to be concerned about, because Chorus is not unique in the sense that they are not the only ones, you know, running these sort of influence campaigns, right? This has happened on the far right for years, although less so. They've gotten a lot more transparent. But like there's a lot of influence campaigns because of the lack of rules around this, like you said earlier, because the FEC is like out to lunch and all there's no regulation basically in the influencer world. We are seeing just like a lot of these influence campaigns happening, and consumers aren't aware of it. And so consumers consume this content and they don't know what people are being paid. And that is very different from how traditional media worked, because to all that the problems of traditional media, there is a lot more disclosure.
Is there? Do I know like every single source of funding for like podcaster people or for like Fox News?
No. We're not talking about podcaster people. We're talking about journalists. So for instance, if you're a journalist at a mainstream media organization, you absolutely could never take outside political funding.
They could take sponsorships or whatever from other people private.
No. If you work at a mainstream news organization, you cannot do any of that. And by the way, I'm sympathetic to the fact that like that might be too extreme. Like I do think that there's probably a happy middle ground where like maybe you can do stuff that's not directly related to your beat, et cetera. Condé Nast specifically on their fashion brands and women's fashion brands, women's media has evolved to the point that women's media organizations are actually negotiating contracts, SponCon contracts for their own reporters.
Wait, can I just so I can be clear. So somebody who works at, say, who's like a host or talent at like Fox News couldn't be paid $5,000 to give a speech somewhere or something like that. They would have to disclose all of that. That's a legal thing?
Well,
or is that...
Fox, I don't know. Fox News does not have the same editorial standards as a lot of other mainstream media places.
Sure, but when you say editorial standards, that implies it's not a legal thing. You're just talking about like some standard or accepted practice at some companies.
Exactly,
but there's no legal enforcement.
So we're talking about mainstream traditional reporting. And I mean, maybe I should say reputable reporting, because I don't think Fox News has a great track record on reputable reporting. But if you look at the mainstream media places, even like CNN, I hate CNN, right? But CNN, New York Times, where I worked, and other places, the Wall Street Journal, all these other mainstream media outlets, Wired, they do have these clauses where, no, you cannot take outside money. You cannot do undisclosed things. You cannot do sponsorship deals on the side or, you know, certainly not take money from a political group. That you would be fired immediately and never hired again if you took undisclosed money from a political group and didn't talk about that. So I think that that's a level of transparency that actually most news consumers aren't aware of. They never realized often that was even something that, like, you know, that there were these editorial standards sort of behind the scenes. And I think as we move towards a more content creator driven ecosystem, it's good to have these conversations of what should be disclosed and when.
Yeah,
right?
I think I could agree with that. I think there should be hardcore disclosure standards enforced, and anybody that calls themselves media alternative or otherwise. But I didn't see any recommendations for that. It seemed like I think coming away from the article, the takeaway is just that this Chorus and 1630 Fund are operating in some like especially nefarious or bad way, especially because I think you had at least two quoted people who were claiming that they were illegally murky at best or were being used to evade FEC restrictions, the Dubois quote.
That's what their lawyer said. Yeah, their lawyer said that.
Wait, the lawyer just was explaining the law. The thing that the Dubois...
He's saying there is no lack of disclosure. He's not saying like, hey guys, the rules exist and we're thwarting them. He's saying, guys, you don't have to worry about these rules, because we're a nonprofit, we're structured in this way where don't worry, you don't have to worry about blah 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 disclosure. Mm-hmm. So I think this goes back to the crux of the problem, which is that we have an FEC that's asleep at the wheel. And I think no matter where you are on the political spectrum, although actually no, if you're on the right, you don't give a shit about disclosure. But if
I understand the FEC, I think that we can definitely fight over how C4s are the disclosure.
We want to at least acknowledge it, right? We want
for sure.
We want at least,
but
and
again,
we should
I don't.
Push
but I think
these
article,
companies,
the article seemed
we should
to
push these companies to acknowledge it.
The article seemed explicitly target Chorus as being exceptionally bad here. So, like for the Elizabeth Dubois quote you had, you were saying that the legal aspects were murky. Well, the legal aspects aren't murky; they're pretty clear. It's just that the legal aspects right now suck, right? The FEC guidelines that we have on this and the IRS guidelines kind of suck for this. So it's not that if you were to read that the legal aspect is murky at best, it makes it sound like Chorus is the one.
So
who's
when I reached
murky.
Out to the FTC, yes. Well, I think what is murky is what crosses over to sponsored content, what crosses over to some of this. So I reached out to the FEC and the FTC about this. And I actually spoke to the former a former FTC person at length about this exact topic, because the FTC doesn't really cover political content, but people were there's some commercial activity where they feel like it can maybe some disclosure requirements can apply and all this stuff. The point is that like, I don't fault, or rather, I think a lot of creators in this program are well-meaning. And I've said from the beginning, I don't think it's necessarily helpful to go around doing a witch hunt of, hey, you took the money, you didn't take the money, you did this, whatever. The reason that we have this story is because creators in the program themselves were uncomfortable with this.
Why is it then like you, because you painstakingly go out to like name creators and their platforms that are associated with it?
Sure, we included the ones that are relevant, right? That we think people should know. And I wish that we could include more. If it were up to me, we'd publish the whole thing.
Yeah, but what's the point of like people knowing?
I think people deserve to know who's getting money without disclosure, right? We want people to know who's getting money without disclosure.
Sure. The disclosure is not legally required, though.
The problem. It's not legally required.
But there's no argument to make it legally required. There's just a targeting of this particular organization acting like they're like in some special bad territory.
What this organization did is not value transparency. So there are other organizations similar to Chorus that do value transparency, that are nonprofits in the space that value transparency. And they say, listen, we're running, ironically, you know, we're running this, this paid, thing for this political, you know, we're running this like political effort for whatever, I don't know, whatever sort of political message they're pushing. Mm-hmm. We value disclosure. We want to make sure that you make it clear that you're, you know, that you have a relationship with us or whatever, whatever. So a paid relationship. So I think
it is kind of a witch hunt then though, right? Like if the goal is to out every creator involved in this particular thing, the goal is to witch hunt them out of this program, right?
Not out of the program. What we want is we want these companies like Chorus to prioritize and center disclosure. And in fact, Stephen, what they have shown is that they continue to double down on lack of disclosure. They still will not publish the full list of creators. They still won't release these creators from their NDA. There are creators right now that want to speak publicly, but are not able to. And there are creators desperate.
I feel like so many people have gone live and spoken publicly about this. That seems hard.
No, they haven't. They've gone live and they've spoken only in the way that they're allowed to about Chorus specifically, but they're not speaking publicly about the sort of the nature of these other programs, or sorry, the paid nature of the program. And so what I think that Chorus
have been people who have literally made videos saying they get paid by Chorus, they're in Chorus.
Now they have. Yes. But they're not talking about the aspects of the sort of non-disclosure. And that what I think would be valuable is for Chorus to say, listen, we value transparency. We realize that this program was not maybe as transparent as it should have been starting out. It
should have been according to you, right?
Well, according to every ethics expert that we asked in media, and I think according to what the public expects from creators, which is a level of transparency where if you're going to take money from a political group for political purposes, you should disclose that. And so I think what Chorus could do to set a good example and to help build a more transparent political media ecosystem, which I think we all want. If we're somewhat on the left, we want more transparent, you know, ecosystem in political media. Say like, hey guys, you are free to talk about this. And that's what I'm saying. Like, I was surprised that they didn't announce the program because even now they still...
Well, they have announced, right? I think Brian Tyler Coyne and I think David Pakman months ago announced that they were starting this program, right?
No, they didn't announce anything about the 1630 fund or any of the funding stuff. They announced that they were doing the public facing program. Sure, that's mm-hmm. never been a secret. That's on the website, but this private paid program was not announced. Of course, now it's all public since I've reported on it. But
have like the application thing like on the website? You could apply to join Chorus if you wanted to.
You could apply to join the public thing, but you that wasn't the same as this like paid thing, which is private. So of course they're soliciting creators for it. There's one creator in the story, right, that who's quoted, who applied for it, who heard about it. It was spreading around, like creators themselves were sort of talking about it. But I think we need a lot more transparency. Another thing that
if the maximum transparency was like the goal, I feel like the easiest thing would then just to be the publish the contract, which if you've gotten several of them, you can totally compare them, you can see, well, but why don't you go? You're the one who wrote the story.
I work for Wired, and unfortunately that is their stance of not publishing the source material because they they are concerned about, you know, potentially identifying stuff. I'm
with
you, Stephen.
Did Wired tell you explicitly on this story that you were not allowed to publish? That was Wired's decision and not yours, that you weren't allowed to publish the contract for this?
We've made the decision that we're not going to publish the source material.
Well, of course, I know you've made that decision because it isn't published, but I'm asking, was it Wired that prohibited you from publishing it?
I'm willing to go back and have a conversation with the lawyer about it again. But what I would say, Stephen, is that Brian Tyler Cohen is a stakeholder in Chorus. If he feels that this story is false, he could, we don't even have to do it publicly, right? He could go to Wired and say, here's the actual contract. Here's the proof that shows that your story is wrong. And Wired would correct it. And Wired has not received any proof from any of these creators privately that it's wrong. And so we, you know, Wired doesn't need to post like receipts or whatever to stand by their reporting. And what I would say to these creators is if you are going to continue to say that it's a lie publicly, then at least provide proof to, you know, the company privately to get a correction on the story. There's not a single correction on the story. And trust me, they would put a correction on the story. If we had proof myself, I mean, I hold myself to standards. Like, I would love to see proof, you know, that they like, hey guys, like all those contracts, everything else you got, all the Zoom meeting, that's all fake, whatever, you know, like this, something else refutes it. Like, sure. But they haven't provided any of that proof privately or publicly. And I think that's because they don't actually care. I'm speculating here, but it seems to me that it's easier for them to respond to a story like this instead of, you know, making it about discussions around transparency. It seems to me that what they instead want to do is, or what they have done, is do all of these silly personal attacks accusing me of being friends with Tucker Carlson or other nonsense like this. I don't know if you've seen this online, but this is what Brian Tyler Cohen responded doing. And they've also been saying things
I think he released a 5-minute video, and I think like 3 seconds of that was related to that. But the rest of that video was responding
with
substance.
It was like five seconds. The rest of the thing was him refuting
a whole bunch of the claims that were made in the article. He didn't show the contract on screen, which I guess is what he would have to do.
He didn't show any proof of anything that he claimed.
Haven't shown any proof of anything that you're claiming either, other than...
I'm a journalist that published it in Wired Magazine. If he wants to go...
Chose not to publish the contract. That was your individual decision,
but again,
right?
It is published... My reporting is published in Wired. You're right. I could have gone on Twitter months ago and said, hey guys, scooptwitter.com, I'm going to publish receipts. Like, this is what a lot of people are used to.
Sure, you keep saying receipts like it's a social media term, but that's not true, right? If you've been a writer... No, absolutely. There are absolutely stories that are published where tons of information is released publicly.
Sometimes the source material is released publicly. Sometimes, in certain instances, and there is a whole...
In certain instances where anonymity can't be guaranteed, but in an instance where you've received multiple contracts, where you can compare the contracts from one to another to verify that the language is unique from one to the other, you very easily can publish an entire contract without damaging any of the individual creators, right?
No, so what we can't confirm, Stephen, and this might be what you're getting stuck up on and confused on, is that we can't confirm, we just can't confirm, we haven't seen the rest, like, we can't confirm what is identifying and what is not unless we saw all the contracts, right? We just don't know. And there's no reason for us to do that when our reporting has not been challenged.
They have challenged the reporting, they just haven't published their contracts
without
yet.
Well, if somebody says a thing, somebody can refute a thing
without publishing a thing either, right?
I mean, Stephen, what you're arguing is something that a lot of people on the right argue, which is that unless you publish this source material in the way that I like it, why should I believe anything on Wired.com has any editorial standards? Why should I believe the Wired lawyers, the Wired fact checkers, the Wired editors, the Wired reporters? Why should I believe any of that? I'm not going to trust any of that. I'm only going to trust... direct source material.
Yeah, but I think that's a great thing to some extent in that there are a lot of companies that do publish a lot of the source material, right? I'm pretty sure Wired even changed their standards to that where they don't do conversations on background anymore. They assume that everything is on the record when they're interviewing people. And I think they make that explicitly clear when Wired is communicating with people.
With spokespeople, that might be. I don't know.
Not with spokespeople, with everybody. I think Wired has an editorial standard now where they don't do on background anymore because they want to be able to source people's names directly. They don't want to just have anonymous sources. They don't want to rely on just a journalist claims.
I don't know if that is true, Stephen, and I would have to ask. But what I would say is the on-background stuff, I'm generally also sympathetic to the idea. I don't give comms people the benefit of on-background conversations. Like, there are reasons to do things on-background versus not on-background. All I will say is, Stephen, if you don't trust Wired's reporting and if you don't trust their fact-checking process and you don't trust the fact, you know, at that point, there's nothing that I just... Then I can't... I can't help you because
well, there's
Wired
a really easy thing.
Control.
All you do is publish the contract, and then that makes everything abundantly clear. And it's like, oh, okay.
Well, again, Wired stood by their reporting. They could provide any evidence
privately.
I know
they've stood by their reporting.
They
you keep talking around this. It's very clever. I understand. But like, it was your choice ultimately to not publish the contract.
Yes, because I don't, you know why? Because I don't want to jeopardize my sources. And we had a lot of conversations and I shared even a portion of the contract. And even my source reached out and was like, hey, I'm just not comfortable with this. And we ultimately want to respect our sources' right to, you know, not be discovered, right to privacy. They're very scared right now because there's a lot of legal threats that are going around. These
sources
are terrified.
How could one single source even know if you have multiple people who've shown you contracts?
One single source know what?
How could one single source reach out to you saying they were uncomfortable about some provision of the contract that was shared if multiple contracts have been shared with you guys? How would they even know?
I don't understand what you're asking. Why
you said
would
that you published something in your article and somebody reached out to you saying they were worried about what you'd published.
No, not in the article. I posted a small sliver of a screenshot of a clause in the contract. And I heard from one of my sources that was like, hey, I'm really scared because they're doing this legal. We're scared of getting sued. I just want to make sure that you're not going to share the contract because, again, the conditions that they shared it under is that it would not be posted all publicly on the internet, that we would report on it and we would use it for reporting material, but we would not post it on Twitter.com, which is the agreement that I made when I reported on this story or when I initially. Now, could I revisit it with them? Maybe. I will try. I've actually, like I said, I have fought so hard. It's ironic that you're pushing me on this because, Stephen, trust me, I have fought in every institution that I'm at to share more source material. I don't know if you remember my interview with Libs of TikTok. That interview was actually in the context of a 3,500-word story that I wrote totally separately that I think a lot of people didn't read. But I knew that actually publishing the source, the actual direct interview, would be the only way that people could sort of like truly understand what this woman had to say and that wouldn't, where these quotes wouldn't be taken out of context and such. So I'm with you. I am totally with you on the transparency there.
You're saying this, but in this particular case, it sounds like Wired would be okay with you publishing the contract, but you decided not to.
Like, no. First of all, I don't think they are okay with me publishing source material. As far as I understand, that's not something that we agreed to at all.
I didn't say you agreed to it, but you keep talking around this, but you chose not to publish the contract. If you went back to your editor right now and you said, I actually think I want to publish portions of this, you're telling me they would say no? Why would you say you can't do that?
I signed an agreement saying that I wouldn't. I signed an agreement saying that I wouldn't do that.
Wait,
so
with who?
With Wired, that I agreed to report this stuff exclusively for Wired.
That's agreeing to report it exclusively for Wired, that you would give them the scoop on something. It's not the same as agreeing that you wouldn't publish
material. No. Stephen, please. I know that you haven't freelanced very much, but no. The point is that
hold
you
on,
cannot
I'm sorry.
Just
to be extremely clear, you're telling me that you have a clause in your exclusive reporting on this with Wired, a clause in your contract that says, I will not publish any of the source material in my article that I write for this.
Yeah, what I signed on to, which is totally standard in a lot of freelance contracts, is that I wouldn't publish it, you know, that I wouldn't publish, that I would reserve all of my exclusive reporting material for them. That means I'm not using it for a podcast. That means I'm not using it for social media.
Taylor, I've signed a lot of these contracts and you're doing this game.
Interrupting me, we're not going to have a conversation. Okay. Are you going to let me finish speaking or are you going to keep interrupting me?
Okay, go ahead.
Please let me finish my thought before you interrupt me again.
Go for it.
There are many reasons why we're not publishing this material directly. All I can tell you, you don't agree with many of them and you can litigate them with me all day and do debate stream, whatever, whatever. It is ultimately unproductive because the result is the same, which is that I am not publishing the direct source material. Now, people can choose, before you interrupt and freak out, okay? People can choose to say, listen, I don't trust Wired. I don't trust their fact checkers. I don't trust their legal team. I don't trust whatever, whatever. I'm sympathetic to that because people don't trust the mainstream media. But what I would say to those people is that Wired does abide by standard journalistic practices. And if Brian Tyler Cohen or any of these other people had provided information, not publicly, but reached out to Wired with information that counteracted the facts of the story or reached out to me with information that disproved the facts of the story, there would be a correction on the story. And so I welcome them even still to provide any information privately. If they don't want to do it publicly, they could still get corrections on the story. They would just have to provide evidence that what we reported was false. So far, they have not done that. Now, listen, you can disagree with this decision not to publish the contract directly, but that is a decision that I made with the sources and that I made with Wired when I agreed to give this reporting to them instead of doing it online. And please, you can critique me and disagree with me on that, but it is completely counterproductive to go around in circles and litigate this over and over again when the end result is the same. And it sounds like you disagree with that. And I'm sympathetic to that disagreement because I have also been in these newsrooms where I've advocated repeatedly for us to put more things on the internet. But that is what it is. And so I guess we will just have to agree to disagree on that point. There are a lot of other things related to this article that I think are a lot more pertinent that we could be debunking, that we could be discussing. And instead, you just want to do this, you know, litigate this thing that is ultimately unproductive. We are just going to fundamentally disagree. And the result is the same.
And I understand. And that's fine. We can disagree on this particular thing. But it's just in an article where it seems like you're advocating for a maximalist approach to transparency that transcends even what the law requires, right? Which is that you want every single content creator, influencer, mm-hmm. talent agency, whatever, to be doing these maximal disclosures about money going around, things that exceed what you yourself see, even Fox News. Yes. Wouldn't make these types of disclosures. It's just interesting that in that same article, you on your own made the choice not to publish the contract that would easily resolve every single claim.
Not on my own.
Just to be clear, that when I say this on your own, I let you go. You have to let me finish, okay?
Yes.
Because every time I ask you if you would have published this, if you would publish the contract, you keep saying we. I understand that you made decisions in conjunction with your editor or whoever you signed with to release this article for. And then when I ask you about publishing the contract, you said you went on to describe parts of your contract, and then you imply that I haven't seen these contracts. It sounds like I've seen just as many, if not more than you, because I know exactly what you're describing when you talk about not publish it anywhere else. And you're just talking about the exclusivity agreement that you had with Wired. You're not talking at all about what you were allowed to publish or the source material being published or not. You were just explaining that you weren't allowed to publish that source material on your Twitter or in any other place. That's just a standard exclusive contract. I understand that, but it has nothing to do with the substance of the question I asked.
Stephen, again, this is just completely unproductive. I have gotten in trouble at news organizations for publishing source material directly. I have gotten in trouble many times over. I'm not about to.
Would Wired block you from publishing the contract? Would Wired say, no, you cannot do that?
Wired, I have no idea. I'd have to talk to them again. Okay. And I'd have to have conversations with my sources about
it. That's fine. That's fair.
So again, the end result is the same. But not publishing, not talking about publicly. Once again, these creators could disprove this by reaching out directly, and they have been unable to refute the facts of our story. So,
and I think they should do that. I don't know why they haven't done that. They should do that. Yeah.
And next time, you know what? I take your point. Next time that I report a scoop, you know, maybe I will spend a little extra time negotiating and saying, by the way, I'm going to release this amount online and I'm going to do this and this. Or maybe I'll just post it on Twitter. I have done that myself with stories sometimes before where I'm like, you know what? I'm actually not even going to do this for a news org. I'm just going to go ahead and post some stuff publicly, you know, because I think that this is a better way to communicate the story. So feedback accepted. And I understand what you're saying because I am on the same side. I think we all want more transparency. What I would say is that I'm a journalist and what we are asking for in terms of the subject of our article, this is a political effort. And I think transparency in terms of communication about who's getting paid is so important in politics. I keep calling you Destiny. Stephen, wouldn't you agree that it's important for people to disclose when they're getting political funding? That's important, right?
I think it's essential, but that's why I advocate for a change in the laws. I would never push just one group or one side or one thing to do that because it just puts you at a disadvantage because now you're disclosing stuff and nobody else is, and now people are just going to attack your disclosures, and now nobody else has to make the same types of disclosures. But I do agree with you in terms of, like, I think that, like, I listen, you know, as much as I disagree with a lot of your stuff, I'm glad that you unmasked the Libs of TikTok account, okay? I think it's really weird that there's a lot of people in alternative media that have a huge sway over our political conversations, and we don't even know who they are, what country they're from, or who they might be paid for, or who they work for. So I think there is a great value in that. I guess just curious, the biggest, strongest claim that I had seen was that people who would even reference being in the program would be that the contract said that they'd be like kicked out. Was that like a clause of the contract written too, that if people acknowledged that they were in Chorus or that they were getting paid, that they could be cut from or kicked out of the program?
Yeah, creators told us that if they had violated any terms of the contract, they could be kicked out. And I think there are, you know, that is part of violating the contract would have been to go public. There are those these agreements, or there is this language in the contract that says this is not public and you cannot disclose basically that you're in this program or disclose the identity of the funder. And that is something, again, that these creators, some of them, wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And they did not want to just get online and say, hey guys, I'm being funded by the 1630 fund or whatever, because they understood that they would be kicked out because that would be one of many things that they could do to violate the terms of the contract. And if you violated the terms of the contract, of course, you would suffer the consequences of that.
Sure. Okay. I mean, that also sounds kind of standard. If you violate terms of a contract, they'll probably kick you out. But the disclosure part, I guess, also depends on how it's being disclosed. I feel like there's probably reason for some caution there, right? In that, there was one part of your article mentioned they needed permission first. I can kind of understand that to maintain the FEC like standing, right? You wouldn't want somebody doing some event and saying like, oh, hey, I'm part of Chorus, and you know, that's why I'm here doing this thing. If Chorus has nothing to do with it, and then Chorus could get roped into a whole FEC debacle where it's like, wait, this was for, you know, they were with an AOC event and now they said that Chorus helped them. So there's like a huge issue here and they shouldn't have said that, you know? Like, I feel like some of those things are kind of fair. Yeah.
I get it. But one thing that I would say, Stephen, and I think actually Tina Nguyen and Mia Sato at The Verge had a really great piece. They did publish this discussion on The Verge, which has also been doing amazing reporting on the influencer industry and politics, about kind of like this strategy of non-disclosure. And they compared it to the Koch network, which is something that the 1630 Fund is compared very frequently to the Koch network, in the sense that they're both these big dark money groups. And in many ways, according to Politico, at least, like the 1630 Fund is sort of this liberal response to the Koch network. And what Tina herself was a Koch fellow, like she, you know, she was in the right-wing media herself. Now she reports on it. I thought what she said was so smart in that piece, where she was talking about like kind of why the Koch network actually has become less relevant over recent years. And in part, it was because it had this, it had this air about it where it was these sort of like shadowy billionaires like funding things, and people sort of didn't like, you know, especially around the Tea Party times, that they were sort of like funding this, you know, fake grassroots movement. Like, people didn't like the idea that there, that this was all happening in secret, and people don't like to feel like their political or, you know, media ecosystem is polluted by these like weird dark money forces, like on the right or the left. And so I think what's interesting about what 1630 is doing now is, and what Tina argues in her piece with Mia, is that like they're sort of pursuing this strategy that ultimately failed. Whereas like something like Turning Point USA, which is a lot more public, the Turning Point, you know, kids, like those influencers, like literally have at Turning Point, like in their bio, it's this like public thing. That actually has been like, that sort of more public program has actually been more successful on the right. And so yes, the right still does a ton of like shady, dark influence stuff. But if you look at these big programs like Turning Point, which I've reported on a bunch myself, it is very like public in this way. And I wonder, and my question would be to 1630 and to Chorus, which they've not, they're not talking to me, but my question to them would be, why not just do it publicly? Why not just, you know, why have these weird things where if it gets disclosed, it makes you seem untrustworthy? Like, why not just make this a public program? Wouldn't that get more people involved? It seems like a lot of these people, like the fans of these people, would be excited for their favorite liberal creators to get funding, as long as they don't feel duped about it. So
what is the, I'm just kind of curious, because I've heard this term thrown around a lot. When you say that, like, or if somebody says that, like, so Chorus exists and then they are funded by the 1630 Fund. When we say dark money, I guess, what is your definition of dark money, or what, how, like, how much, how far back do you have to go for it to not be dark money?
Definitely. So, so actually I had Anna Mascolia, who is one of the, and I definitely butchered her last name, but she was managing editor at Open Secrets for like 7 years. She's, she publishes a newsletter called Influence Watch. She is one of the foremost journalists in the country talking about dark money. And I just made a video with her that's out today, actually answering this question. So I'll try to summarize what she told me. But basically dark money just means that you don't know where, you sort of don't know who it's from. And it's usually, and it's a political, like people, when people talk about dark money groups, they're not just talking about every 501c4 or whatever nonprofit or whatever. They're talking about like a entity that has a certain structure that is meant to evade, it's that is for political purposes. That also you don't have, oh my God, I'm butchering it, but like you don't have to know who funds it. So the big issue with 1630 Fund or some of these other big dark money groups, do they do a lot of great work? Yeah. I mean, 1630's funded a ton of like reproductive justice stuff. Like, you know, I'm not saying like they're evil in some way, just the way that a lot of conservatives wouldn't say Koch network is evil. They believe that they're doing good, but we don't know who funds them. And the only way we find out who funds them is if people self-disclose. So sometimes public organizations disclose, like public Fortune 500 companies will donate to these funds, and sometimes they'll disclose. But lots of billionaires and foreign, you know, billionaires and stuff will donate to these things, and we don't know. And so, you know, this is why one creator, I don't know if you saw him, I forgot his name, but his TikTok went kind of viral. He was actually asked to be part of this 1630 funding program with Chorus, and Chorus is described as a project of the 1630 fund in the contracts. He said, listen, I have security clearance in whatever the government. And to maintain that security clearance, I have to be able to prove that I have never accepted money from any sort of foreign adversary. If I take money from a dark money group, you don't know where that money ultimately originated from. And so he couldn't join the program.
I don't know if that sounds not accurate to me, because if you don't know where the money's coming from, how can the foreign money be a corrupting influence?
Well, that's a really good question, right? Is that you don't know. So you they're not directly corrupting you in the sense of like, they're not like, I'm so-and-so and here's like, you know, here's how I'm going to influence you. The question I think arises with these dark money groups is because we don't know who's funding them, we don't know how much that's impacting their legislative agenda. We don't know how much that's impacting their policy initiatives.
I'm thinking if you filled out like an SF-86 and you've had the, well, I'm not talking about the lawmakers, I'm thinking for the clearance form. Like generally when you're doing your SF-86 background checks and you're talking to people, it's to make sure that they don't have foreign relationships that they aren't disclosing to the government, because those can be corrupting or be used for leverage or other things, you know, if you travel or whatever. So I don't understand like a dark money. Like it's like, imagine somebody's bribing you, but it's just $10,000 shows up in your mailbox and you don't know who it comes from. I don't know how that could
disqualifying. You'll have to take it up with him. But what he says on TikTok, and he's public and he's been answering people's questions on TikTok, so you should definitely go ask him. But what he said is that he had to prove basically that he had never received foreign money from certain places. His name, let me just get his name for you guys, because then you can go yourselves and
But also,
and
it wouldn't be receiving foreign money. It'd be receiving money from the 1630 fund, right?
Well, so, but the foreign money could, and we're saying foreign, basically money that he couldn't accept could be funded there. Hold on, let me just grab his, it's Shane Morris.
Okay, sure.
So if Shane you go Morris. On Shane Morris, you guys can go ask sure. him these questions.
But now, like, if I have a W-2 employee and I get paid and I make money from different things, like that W-2 employee, they only have to disclose that they're being paid by LLC. It doesn't matter where my money comes from, right? Yeah.
Well, you should ask this to Shane, who's very public and is talking about this. I did not talk to Shane for my story. Mm-hmm. So, you know, don't drag him, because people keep saying he's my source and he is somebody that I saw actually after my story came out. But I think the issue is that we don't know the influence that these donors have on the 1630 Fund's agenda or policy agenda or programs. And so that's the concern with dark money is, I personally would not feel comfortable as a journalist taking money from somebody where I don't know where that money is coming from, because I want to have a certain level of transparency and I want to be able to communicate to my audience, hey guys, I have never taken money from XYZ. I've never taken money from Mark Andreessen, for instance, and I never would. And that is something that I feel like I can communicate confidently to my audience because I know exactly who funds me. And I think one problem with these dark money groups is that we don't know who funds them. And we just deserve more transparency on the political ecosystem across the board. You're right. This is a structural problem. This is not something that the creators themselves are going to solve. But we should advocate for less dark money in politics. Because one thing that the dark money groups really do, which is not even related to the course thing, is they're funding the PACs, right? And the super PACs. So PACs, of course, have to disclose, and they have to, I think you're part of one, right? You have to disclose.
I'm not part of any PAC.
Oh, you're not. Okay. Take it back. For some reason, I thought you were. Anyway, but you know what a PAC is, right? The super PAC or whatever. So what these dark money groups will do is they'll sort of spin up, there'll be a dark money fund spin up, or they'll sort of spin off like a shell sort of group. And then that will just fund the PAC. And so we still don't really have transparency because we don't know who funded that dark money group. Now it's just a black box of money.
Sure.
And that black box of money is funding the PAC that's then doing political activity. So we want more transparency.
Yeah. So I guess the question is, because I'm kind of curious, because it's hard to, I guess, like differentiate between all these organizations. So obviously, a lot of people have said I was part of some PAC because I did a couple activations, I guess, with Progressive Victory a while ago. But
oh, okay.
I've seen people attack you over the Amidia or whatever.
Amidiar. I'm in a journalism fellowship right now. So,
but I'm just curious because of that, because they use that same like hybrid funding methodology to where the group that you work for, they are also funded by their 501c4.
No. So I'm funded by, I'm in an investigative journalism fellowship that one, I just should very much be very clear about, is not political. Okay. I'm not part of any political program or anything like that. This is an investigative reporting fellowship that is non-political, non-partisan. It is just to support investigative journalism. Mm-hmm. It is funded by Pierre Omidyar, who's a billionaire. Now, Pierre Omidyar himself has donated to dark money, just the way that Lorraine Powell Jobs,
The Omidyar Network is a hybrid. I think it's a 527 on one end and then a 501c4. And the 527 is able to bill about $15 million a year to the 501c4 quote unquote dark money thing. What you say about being an independent journalist, yeah. couldn't somebody just who's part of Chorus say the same thing? And then you could challenge.
No, because I know where 100% of the funding for my program comes from, which is directly from Pierre Omidyar. And Omidyar came out and gave a statement making this clear that they have not received any other funding
by him personally. You're not taking money from the entity.
The entity that I am part of, which mm-hmm. is part of, which is the Reporters in Residence program.
Yeah, well, I'm talking about the federal taxed entity. That entity is part of a hybrid structure that does get money through the C4.
No, they're funded by Pierre Omidyar. So Pierre Omidyar is the billionaire. So you're confusing it. So dark money doesn't fund billionaires. Billionaires fund dark money. Sure. So
well, just
billionaires,
to be the org you're part of, I can see their 990Fs. Like they file these things publicly. They get yeah. they bill about $15 million a year. I think it was like $14.6 million last year to their partner 501c4. You can read on the Omidyar Network website that they operate in this hybrid manner.
Right. And I'm not part of any of that. I'm only part of the Reporters in Residence program, which gets 100% of its funding from Pierre Omidyar. That's his fund. That's what he funds it for. So now Pierre Omidyar himself, you're right, has given to dark money funds and does his own political things. I'm not disputing that. But I know where my money comes from, where I'm like, okay. Do I feel comfortable taking this fellowship that is Pierre Omidyar's money? I personally do because he funds The Intercept and he funds a lot of journalism programs. And it's also, I've worked for billionaires, unfortunately, my entire journalism career. I worked for The Atlantic as well. That's funded by Lorraine Powell Jobs, who I'm sure also gives money to dark money mm-hmm. groups. Jeff
but
Bezos.
For the Chorus people that reached out to you, for their paychecks, were they signed by like the 1630 fund or were they signed by like the Chorus Network?
As far as I understand, it was 1630, as far as I understand.
But you haven't seen any like deposits or check slips or anything?
I don't remember, but in the communication, mm-hmm. they say, in the communication that we have, they say that it will say 1630 on it.
Gotcha.
And that's why like the contracts and stuff again. And I'm not saying that like these creators are evil for accepting this money. I think they're like what liberals will have many people, and Anna clarifies this in the video that I made as well. Mm-hmm. Like what many of them will say is like, look, I don't like the system either, right? Like I don't like this system either. I think that this is bad. I think the Koch network is evil. But until we change these laws, I think we should leverage it. And I feel comfortable taking this money, whatever, whatever. What I would say to them is that's totally your decision, right? Like you've made that. Well, I personally, I'm a journalist. I hold myself to different standards, but you're a political activist. Maybe sure. you feel totally fine.
I understand what you're saying, but your checks are not signed by that Pierre guy. Your checks are signed by, I'm guessing it says the Omidyar Network or whatever, right?
I actually don't know because I haven't gotten paid, but I would imagine that it says the Reporters in Residence, yeah, the LLC it's an LLC. So
yeah. But the LLC is that's the other hybrid.
It's 100%. No, it's not hybrid. That's 100% funded by Pierre Omidyar. And
it
if
is
you want
absolutely
to,
not. It's not. You can read their filings. It's just not.
You can, but you. You might be confused by their filings, but here, if you click mm-hmm. on this Omidyar Network support approach to funding journalism, they issued a statement right here.
I see the statement at the end. It says the work is supported entirely via our foundation and LLC. That foundation is the hybrid foundation that includes the 501c4. Their 990F filings
what you're
are
saying,
public.
But yeah. when it comes to the Reporters in Residence program, we do know where the funding comes from. So I'm with you. I'm with you, Stephen. I know mm-hmm. that they also do political stuff and all of that, and the foundation itself is completely separate. That was something that I was like, obviously we're all aware of, but I know personally where my money comes from. And the issue that some people feel that they have a problem with dark money is that they don't necessarily know where that money comes from.
Sure.
And so that is the argument that I think remains to be made. And again, it's some of them are fine. They might say, like these reproductive justice activists, right, that also take money from 1630. They're like, yeah, okay, I don't know where all the money's from. Maybe it is from an evil billionaire that I completely disagree with, but I'm going to take that money anyway and I'm going to use it for a good cause. Mm-hmm. I think that you can make that argument. And I'm not shaming anyone, you know, for that. But what I think that we can all agree with is disclosure. As you noted, this sure. program that I'm in sent out a press release the day. There's all the information that you can find is public. And the reason that you're
well,
able
but they
to
haven't.
Find those
I mean,
documents.
Like none of the contracts have been published for those creators that are there, right?
Well, Right, because it's not public. Their contracts are not public. Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, well, I'm saying, but there's not transparency there, right? Well, I don't know any of the, I don't know what your contract looks like. I don't know. Like, none of the, what they put on this website is legally binding. They're just writing a thing, and they're saying it's supported entirely via the foundation at LLC. But I can't look at the specific funding mechanisms that are routed through
and if you found like evidence or something, like what I would say is that if somebody reported on that program and was able to find evidence that the network had lied or had not disclosed and there was a secret funder, that would be an amazing article that somebody could write, right? Like, just the way that the chorus, it's like, oh, wow, 1630 fund is behind them. Actually, that's confusing, whatever. What I would say is, again, Pierre Omidyar is a billionaire. So billionaires fund dark money groups. Dark money groups don't fund, they don't just go around giving billionaires money. Billionaires are the funders. So I have made the decision, unfortunately, that I have taken money from billionaires ultimately working for doing an investigative journalism fellowship or working at these billionaire-owned media companies. I don't love it. It's part of the reason I went independent, but at least I'm comfortable with the people that I'm taking money from. There are billionaires that I would never take money from. For instance, Mark Andreessen and others. Mm-hmm. And so I think that that's a conversation that we need to have, but I'm comfortable with the level that I've had of disclosure. And I think that that's what we need to focus on is the lack of disclosure in the political space. Because that's another thing that's different, right? I'm not in a political program. I'm in an investigative journalism fellowship. I'm not doing political activism.
Well, Chorus is also not supposed to be in a political program as well, right? Like, I think it's...
No, Chorus is political. The whole reason that Chorus exists is to fix the Democrats' internet content creator problem.
Sure, but isn't the stated mission, the stated goal is like basically just informing people on democracy and stuff like that? Like, I think that it's expressly supposed
what
to
they,
be. Like,
well, I don't know what they have, but I'll tell you how Brian Tyler Cohen described its mission. Let's see. This is how Brian Tyler Cohen described it in the New York Times. He said, he's talking about launching Chorus. We have an obligation to do it, to launch Chorus, because the Democratic Party has been so slow in adapting to the media environment we're in right now. And so what the goal is, according to this article, which is the launch article that Ken Bensinger wrote, is their goal is to help the Democrats. Again, that's not a secret.
Sure. I think that's a way that you could read that. But I mean, you could also just say that, like, the values and things that I aligned with the Democratic Party on, the other things that I imagine the 1630 Fund supports, the Democrats have done a poor job at that messaging. So they want to reach out and educate creators and everything in order to, I guess, like, advocate more strongly.
To help the Democrats.
Help the Democrats, but to, like, support things like ballot initiatives related to abortion or legalization of marijuana, whatever, I don't know, whatever the 1630 Fund.
Yeah, Democratic policies that Democrats
They're policies that they support, but they're not necessarily helping the Democrats, right? Like, there's no formal connection to the DNC or anything, right?
I don't think that Republicans are getting into these programs. I don't think that, you know, I mean, you're right. I guess the 1630 Fund has funded, you know, they funded RFK, I believe. They had some sort of weird funding thing with RFK. So I guess, yeah, maybe. Mm-hmm. But what I would say is I don't think it's a secret that Chorus is meant, the whole nature of Chorus is to help Democrats, you know, fix and get back in power. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, my issue with Chorus and the center of my article is disclosure. And it doesn't sound like we disagree on that. And I think that you can litigate a lot and you can say all this stuff about...
Sure. I don't understand the difference the difference between, like, Chorus and the Omidyar Network is. It feels like the same, like the Reporters in Residence program is a program that's funded via the C4 that the Omidyar Network runs, and the same way that Chorus is funded by the C4 part of the 1630 Fund.
I think you're confused. So again, my investigative journalism fellowship is not a political program.
It doesn't matter if it's a political program. It's funded by a dark money foundation.
It's just not true that the Reporters in Residence program is funded by dark money. It's funded by Pierre Omidyar.
It's not your paychecks funder. You're a 1099.
I have actually not even received. You know what, Stephen?
You're not getting paid by him personally, right? If I pay an employee something through my company, that's not me personally giving them money.
There's a level of transparency that I know where the money came from, and that is.
But that's not publicly disclosed to any of us, which is the transparency that you're asking for, right?
They publicly disclose it in this. They publicly disclose it right here.
If this counts as public disclosure with no tax forms published, then Brian Tyler Cohen counts as public disclosure when he refutes parts of the contract. Right? Why would he be demanded to publish the contract, but Omidyar Network can just be taken at face value for a PR
statement?
Omidyar
Network is not a political group. I don't know what you're trying.
It functions as a super PAC. It functions as
It's not a super PAC either. Stephen, I think you're very confused. So part of, and I encourage you to read Anna's work, and maybe you could have Anna on your stream actually to talk about this, because Anna covers dark money and she can go into all of this detail where she can explain to you the nuances that might really help you understand. Part of what makes a a dark money group is the political nature of the group. So it's not just any like, you know, group. And this is why people were thinking like, oh, the NAACP is a dark money org. Like that's something people on Threads are saying. You have to be doing sort of specific political activities as far as she, again, she worked at Open Secrets, which I would say is sort of like the default description of it. Mm-hmm. There is that political nature to it. So I think that I don't know, you know, I can't answer these specific like tax questions of, you know, that you're having about certain forms and things, but I know that Anna is somebody who I trust, who is one of the top reporters in the country on dark money. She does explain the difference between the stuff in the video on my channel. I personally did not work at Open Secrets for 7 years, so I'm sorry that I can't like litigate all those little things, but I do feel confident in saying that I know where every dollar that I receive came from and who's paying the bills.
Sure. So I'm just curious. So for the Immediate Art Network, because I read their site, they operate a dual 501c3 and an LLC structure. Do you know every dollar that goes into the LLC?
Yes. I asked about this when I accepted this fellowship. And well, I mean, know
like,
that
you
it's see, from
like they've given you like a profit and loss. They've given you some kind of tax filing, a 1040, 1120s.
They gave me enough information that I completely trust them. Yeah,
Taking it on word from a billionaire, right?
No, I'm not taking it on word from a billionaire. I'm taking it from. I mean, they provided me evidence showing that, and I believe them. And you're
okay,
right.
Okay, but to the outside world, it's a dark money. It's a dark money fund, right? Because we don't know what goes into the LLC. No, how is it not dark money? Can they not accept an infinite amount of money from people that don't have to disclose?
An LLC that pays investigative journalists is not dark money. Again, you're missing the key part, Stephen, of dark money, which is that it is political in nature. The goal
investigative journalism can't be political in nature.
So the program that I'm in is not a political program, and it is not for political purposes, and it is completely nonpartisan. I'm not a Democrat. And in fact, what I would say to you, Stephen, mm-hmm. is if Omidyar is so involved in dark money and 1630 fund or whatever, me reporting critically on one of his investments shows that I am editorially independent from whoever
is paying.
Yeah,
but what you're saying
is
the same argument a lot of content creators and Chorus use when they said they've said negative things about the Democratic Party. David Pakman just said that, or they've said negative things about the war in Israel.
I think that they're right. Oh, the Israel stuff we should talk about too. I think that that does, I agree with them. I think that that is evidence of their editorial independence. And I have mm-hmm. said from the jump, and if you read our story again, our story doesn't say that they were given talking points, especially about Israel and all of that stuff. So I do
think
that
when... if they didn't carry the toe of the content line...
You keep interrupting me.
Because you keep pivoting. I think you said that they...
It
sounded like
I'm
they had a lot of...
questions.
They had a lot of content.
This is very unproductive, ultimately. I don't know what to tell you other than I am not involved in a political program. Mm-hmm. I am doing an investigative journalism fellowship that is not, the goal of that program is not political. And I do think that should investigative journalists also, you know, have more transparency around their program? Sure. But political content creators taking political money, in my opinion, should disclose and should ask a lot of questions because there's a lot of money aimed at influencing politics. Unfortunately, there's not as much money paying investigative journalists. They're just, nobody's doing that. It's a charity, basically. Whereas there's a lot of money in the political system to influence specific political outcomes. That's a key difference.
My understanding when you wrote about Chorus is that but one of the earlier lines was that they had restrictions on the political content that the content creators could make. That sounded like a part of the contract.
So one thing that the story says is that there were restrictions on the content, but we're not talking about specific, like, you know, I don't know what it says in terms of like Chorus's policy agenda or whatever, but that you can read the language in the article.
Sure, it says, among other issues,
it
mandated extensive secrecy about disclosing their payments and had restrictions on what sort of political content the creators could produce. So that was like in the contract, it said you were not allowed to produce this type of like conservative content or pro-Palestine content.
I didn't see them use, no. Well, one thing that I think if we could move on to that I think would be more productive, is to discuss this Israel question, because that is something that a lot of people have had questions about. And I've seen a lot of speculation about online where people have said, oh, they're paid not to talk about Israel, da, da, da. Nowhere in our article does it make that claim. Nowhere. And that is something that I think people brought up. It is something that I looked into. There are content creators in this program that have spoken about Palestine. And I think that, you know, a lot of people have sort of taken the article, which is paywalled. And this is another problem with journalism, that it's paywalled. So I don't think a lot of people read the full article, but I just do want to make it clear that I think some of what these content creators like David Pakman have refuted are actually not claims ever made in our article.
Well, but everybody else is making, does it bother you if every other like leftist creator is making these claims, that that's what the article says? Like, why is there so much ubiquitous, I guess, like confusion on that side? Like, well, it all seems to be pointed in one direction.
Yeah, it's not One Direction. I think people, unfortunately, once you publish something, people take a lot of, you know, people take your stuff and make claims, and it's, I try to debunk it as best I can. But you know, all I can do is continue to point to the article and kind of share the information that I have. But I think that part of what's driving all of that, I mean, aside from the fact that Gaza is such a dividing issue among so many people online, in the sort of the left sphere, is that we don't know the full makeup of the chorus program. So we still don't have a roster. This is another argument for transparency. Omidyar Reporters in Residence program, like, we know everyone that's in it, right? We don't know with the chorus cohort.
We don't know. We don't know everybody that's in it. We know the PR statement that they've put out, but we don't have like tax filings or anything. We don't see all of their payroll. We don't see all of the disbursements that the company's made, right?
On Chorus? What are you talking about?
No, on the Omidyar Network, right? On the LLC. I don't know everybody they pay.
They
announce that these are just statements, right? We don't have any tax filings, we don't have any proof.
Steven, it would be a great news story if they announced that. Why would they? Okay. First of all, they announced the public roster saying, hey guys, here's who are the newest members of our reporting fellowship. Now, if you think that there are secret journalists that are also part of the reporting fellowship that they didn't announce, I really encourage anyone to find that story. That would be a crazy story. I've been on the Zoom calls. I've never seen anybody that was not announced as part of the program on our Zoom meetups. That would be very silly. And there is no reason to hide who's in an investigative journalism fellowship. With the Chorus program, we know who some creators are in the program, but we don't know the full 90. And so what you're seeing a lot of creators on the left say is, hey, we don't know who's in this program. We just know out of this cohort, XYZ amount of creators haven't spoken sufficiently about Gaza, about XYZ. And so they're sort of extrapolating a lot. What I would say to them is, hey guys, before you make a lot of those claims, let's encourage Chorus to publish the full roster. Let's encourage more creators to come forward themselves and talk about it if they're able to, so that we have a better picture of the ideological makeup. Because I just don't think we have enough information to know the true ideological makeup of this cohort without knowing people who are in it. I was able to confirm a couple dozen creators, but 90 creators, we just don't know. You know, we could have a lot.
Sure, but like, what does that even mean? The ideological makeup, is this off of a singular issue, off of Israel-Palestine? And then,
well,
now if all of these people have been harassed,
that,
to have been like named in the story, then doesn't that just mean, so then we're not actually looking for transparency at all? We're just looking to make sure that they're, you know, in alignment on this particular issue.
Well, some people, like, the people who care about that issue, so for instance with Gaza, right, Stephen, you would agree a lot of people online care about this issue.
Yeah,
so
I think
they
want to Glenn Greenwald about it even, I think. Yeah,
when you, I did, know, mm-hmm, who hates me and finally had me on his show after shitting on me for years and years. You know, for people who care a lot about Gaza and they really want to know who in this program is pro-Palestine, who in this program has said what, they want that level of transparency. Right now, we just don't have that level of transparency. And so I think one thing that would be helpful for this program and any programs in the future is to have more transparency. So people can look and say, hey, 50% of creators in this program haven't spoken up about abortion, haven't spoken up about Gaza, have said this, but haven't said this. Maybe support rolling back Section 230, whereas 50% support fighting Section 230. I don't know. I'm just think these are tech policy things that I care about. But like, I think that the more transparency, the better, and the less there are going to be this sort of like speculation. Because
right, so
I think
is the scary thing that people are being funded through nefarious means, or that they just don't align politically enough with the people that want to witch hunt them? Because this just sounds like now we just want to see the full list of people to make sure that they are aligned on like the monoculture
issue.
I think that personally I don't really care
where these people want to stand on whatever issue that they want to stand on. It's,
well, yeah, but you're
totally
publishing these articles that are being used by other people as basically cudgels other people,
those,
right?
People,
and it sounds like
those people, well, they can take my article and use it however they want. Those people that are very focused on soul issues, right? They're going to take any announcement of any program. I've reported on other programs, by the way, that they've done the same thing to, right? Where they're like, well, where is this program on XYZ issue? And a lot of people care about, I mean, we saw this in the lead up to Harris's election, we saw a lot about Gaza, but we also saw this exact same thing happen on other issues. Like, I mean, look at Gen Z for Change. Remember that back in TikTok for Biden? There were so many conversations around like, well, who out of this cohort is for what? Like, that's just something that people want to know. And so I am saying, in the interest of transparency, it would behoove any of these organizations to be clear about their roster, because clearly there are activists online who care about specific issues, who want to know where these different cohorts stand, or who maybe want to reach out across the aisle and say, look, I've noticed that 70% of your creators haven't spoken about reproductive justice. So I'd like to reach out and educate you guys on this issue. Just more transparency is better across the board for no matter what. It alleviates all of this sort of speculation, and it just provides more opportunities, I think, for everyone to sort of build that trust with their audience.
Sure. I mean, as you've gone around like making the rounds on some of these shows, on a lot of these leftist shows, have you corrected anybody who is running
yes.
with that?
Okay. I have tried to correct people, and I actually asked somebody to change a title on something. And I'm doing a TV hit tomorrow, like a television hit, and they literally reached out to me with like misleading framing. And I was like, hey, before I hop on, I just want to make sure that you've read what the actual article says. And I even just sent an email to another podcast last night trying to debunk, like, I don't think they had even read the article and they were going to cover it. So
sure, but I'm pretty sure you told Glenn Greenwald that you'd felt that the Democratic establishment had chosen neoliberal content creators based on their position on whether or not it was a genocide in the Gaza Strip. Like, that was one of the things I think you said to Glenn Greenwald. So it seems like that's feeding like really heavily.
No, I think that traditionally during the campaign, maybe is that what you're thinking of? I was talking about during the campaign.
Yeah, but it's in an interview while you're talking about your article. And this is the assumption that every other person who's read your pieces is running with it.
I think we were very explicitly talking about during the DNC. But yeah, I've tried to correct it. I'm in the TikTok comments. If you see me in the TikTok comments, I'm saying, hey guys, just wanted to fact check this. And I just shared a video on Instagram. I literally just reposted a guy like, I think I reported or I commented, I can't remember, but
sure.
You know, saying, so hey guys, here's what's true, here's what's not true. And I when I have time, I will make a more thorough video. You know, sometimes I try to do like a TikTok where I'm like, hey guys, here's the 10 craziest claims about my article. Like, let me share, kind of like debunk some of that. But
so you would say that, like, as it stands right now, based on what you've seen from Chorus, there's no evidence that they were guiding or telling content creators that were part of Chorus what type of content they could make or what political positions they had to have.
So they didn't give people explicit talking points. They didn't, they have these daily messaging check-ins, and obviously they are sort of letting creators into a cohort based on their own guidelines. We don't know their guidelines. Like, we don't know what criteria they were using to select the creators in their program. Again, more transparency would be great. But as far as I've seen, and you can see this even in the article itself, Stephen, is that we don't make the claim that they were like given talking points or, you know, again, we had creators reach out to us saying like, I was actually concerned about the Gaza stuff because like maybe it would, you know, whatever. But I looked into it and I did not find any evidence that they were, you know, preventing people from saying the word Israel or AIPAC or something that some people were claiming. So it does a lot of disservice to the journalism, I think, when you have these content creators come like David Pakman come on and refute claims that were never made in the article without making it clear.
Well, Hassan Piker also repeated that like these people were basically blocked from talking about Israel-Palestine, or I think Emma Vigilant, I think, also was saying as much that like, oh, they're only allowing people to say good things about Israel. This is why I think a lot of those content creators maybe weren't responding to your article, but how well the leftists had ran with the article.
But I think it's important to respond to, I think it's important when you're debunking an article, especially if you care about building trust in journalism instead of dismantling trust in journalism, I think it's helpful to say, hey, these claims have not been made in the article, which actually bolsters their point. But of course, they spent so much time trying to discredit the article. But I think it would be helpful for them to say, hey, this claim wasn't made in the article, but let me debunk it. Because again, this is a very hot button issue. And I think it's worth, I know Current Affairs had a piece on this in a while. The Democratic Party does not have a great track record in this area, which I think is also what has, like, I'm talking specifically about the campaign trail and kind of what they did at the DNC. I think that is made a lot of people sort of question all of this stuff. But I think the better that, you know, what they should do is counter that with more transparency. And another thing I could just debunk really quickly, since you're giving me the opportunity, is that we did not mention the DNC in the article, aside from just mentioning that this girl has a pro-DNC meme page. But a lot of people, I think, are conflating this liberal dark money group with the DNC. And I saw Shelby, poor Shelby, at the DNC sort of trying to fact check that. And I think it's because you bring up
the Democrats a lot, right? Like when you say Democrats struggle to work with a specific organization.
And I just want to make it clear that we don't mention that specific organization. The DNC is used as slang for the establishment in a way that I'm sympathetic to. And I totally have done that myself, but we don't mention the DNC. And I've seen a lot of these creators tweet, for instance, a meme account that was tweeting about the Democrats. They quote tweeted it and said, oh, look, you know, you're paid by the DNC. You're part of the same thing. That account was paid by the DNC, actually, totally separately, but not part of this program. So the DNC has done tons of creator stuff. They have that new guy in place who maybe you should talk to, who's, you know, their new head of influencer. I think his name is Tim or something, partnerships. But they were not, like, we didn't even reach out to the DNC about this story because they're not.
Sure. I guess when we say that, like, because the I don't know what you call the second title on the article, but the
subhead.
So an initiative aimed at boosting Democrats online offers influencers up to $8,000 a month to push the party line. And then all they have to do is keep it secret and agree to restrictions on their content. And then you mentioned later on in the article about the Democrats and Joe Biden and campaigns. Like, that feels like a pretty official establishment tier.
Sure. Oh, they're definitely in with the establishment.
Well,
sure.
Like, not, I mean, just, but like the White House and Joe Biden. And I mean, it feels pretty easy to rope. Like, I would understand why anybody would rope the DNC into that, right? If you're talking about literally the party and pushing the party line and Joe Biden and the White House, right?
I mean, we don't mention that. We mention Joe Biden, so they can loop that in and establishment, and sure. But I don't think those people actually read the article, Stephen. Based off a lot of what people have been saying, I just don't think people made it past the paywall. Because if they made it past the paywall, the people, at least that I've interacted with, that are confused about the article, when I send them the text of the article or I send them the remove paywall link, it usually has cleared things up. So,
okay. I feel like if I wrote an article and this many people had this big of a misunderstanding, I would be very bothered. But
Why I'm here, helping you understand it, because I think that there's a lot of misconceptions about it. And I do want to be accountable to people. I pride myself on engaging with lots of people, even if they disagree with me on so many issues. I will always talk to them, hear out their point, hear their feedback. That's how I become a better journalist. If I only talk to people that agree with me or never have criticism of me, I would not become a better journalist. So I appreciate your feedback, and especially your feedback about, you know, the ability to post more source material online. That's certainly something, again, that I've advocated throughout my career and will continue to advocate for. But I like to hear feedback. What I don't like is people doing stupid personal attacks or saying, oh, you're a secret Republican or whatever, whatever. Like, that is just so stupid and unproductive and, like, not, that doesn't, like, do anything to, do you know what I mean? It's just very silly. Not that you did that, but I just... in terms of like why I block people online and stuff like that. It's because I have to know that you're actually coming in good faith.
Okay. All right. Is there any other thing you want to go over relating to this, or?
I think that's it. I hope that people can read it, and I hope that they can keep an open mind. I think that a lot of people reflexively might hate the article, right? Because they want the Democrats to win and they don't want to support any article that they feel like is critical, right? They're like, why are you bashing? Why are you doing a hit piece? What I would say is that I also want the Democrats to win. Obviously, I don't want Trump in power. Of course not. He's a fascist. It's terrible. I don't support the MAGA movement. I'm not a Republican. I want them to have a more effective strategy. And I think before you attack me, look at people like Tina Nguyen or Mia Sato or some of these other journalists that have written so smartly. McKenna Kelly also writes about politics really well and the internet. Like, a lot of people have made similar points that I've made in this story about these broader sort of issues with the Democrats and the Democrats all over, from the DNC to the lawmakers to these groups and stuff, about their sort of media strategy. And I think that we can all agree that the Democrats do need a better media strategy and a better set of policies, I would argue, to reach more people. And so when you read an article like mine, before you get so mad or before you start fighting, you know, on the internet or whatever, please understand that, like, it would be great if I wish the Democrats would run a more transparent, more effective program. I've written those pieces, by the way, announcing more transparent programs or promoted those pieces when I see them in the news and then, wow, that's really great. You know, I have no problem with an effective influencer program. I have no problem if they just say, you know what, guys, we're only doing a neoliberal influencer program. I don't think that's all they should do. But maybe they want to cater to those people online for a while. I don't know. They've been doing that for years. But who cares? That's their prerogative. I think that the issue is transparency. And what we should ask for in this space is more transparency across the board. Because the less transparency, the more advantage the far right has. Because they have more money. If you start to play the dark money game, like, they're going to win every time. So we want more transparency in the space. We want more transparency from our political media so we know who we can trust. And yeah, that's all. But you don't have to, sure, like, you know, yeah, I'm not a secret Republican, or I think that it's not that controversial.
Sure. I mean, I agree with I agree with what you're saying. I don't think that was hardly anywhere in the article. I feel like the only prescription I saw from the article was the quote from the one person, which basically says
I didn't
that
put prescriptions in it. Yeah, you're right.
Well,
I
you didn't. There was a prescription in it, which was that the middleman is bad, basically, that that there shouldn't be, that people should just give money directly to content creators. So, like, that we're supposed to fund the entire Democratic messaging apparatus with super chats and Medium or Substack subscriptions, I guess.
I don't know about that. So, but I do think less top down control is good. I mean, if you look at Turning Point as a version of success, right? They have, of course, some organizational structure, but it's pretty open and collaborative.
Charlie Kirk literally has phone calls with Donald Trump. That is one of the most top-down, heavy, organized things.
In terms of their messaging. But I'm saying it's a big, sprawling organization.
Yeah, this top-down structure. They raise a ton of money from people that pay money into them. They all take direction and organizational stuff from Charlie Kirk, who communicates with President Donald Trump. Yeah.
Sure. Top down in terms of messaging. I guess maybe top down is the wrong word. Why don't I rephrase it so that you're not confused?
To be clear, I'm not confused. I'm just saying that you're advocating for some type of structure,
well,
like what Charlie Kirk is doing.
Seems to be some confusion between what I'm trying to communicate and how you're receiving it.
I understand.
So let
you're
me rephrase it in a way.
Go ahead. Make me understand.
Exactly. Yeah. Let me rephrase it in a way so that my
it's
message is clear.
Yes.
Okay. And that is not an indictment of you. I am just trying to explain what I'm trying to say.
Okay.
I think that more transparency is good, because the more open these programs are, the more people will want to get involved, the more grassroots the movement becomes, and the less bad faith attacks can be levied. You know what I mean? And I think that is just something that across the board is helpful. I understand the purpose of middlemen. Mm-hmm. I think there's all these different sort of things that they can serve and not serve. I don't think it helps the Democratic Party to only rely on middlemen. But look at iShowSpeed, who did a great live stream from the Capitol the other day, got, you know, helped the Democrats, whatever. Adam Faze coordinated that. That was great, right? Like, things like that are fine. It's great.
Sure. Organization, like you said, Chorus had 90 content creators. Is there any organization of this size that has existed so far?
They're the big one. There's a few other, Vocal Media has done some stuff. There's a Teddy Schleifer actually in the New York Times, wrote a really good piece, which might be good for you to review with your audience, on a lot of these different efforts. There's I think it's called Project Bullhorn. There's Project Zero. They all have sort of different goals of, like, some of them are funding creators directly. Mm-hmm. Some are funding editors. They all sort of have different structures and things. I think Channel Zero, is that the one that
Rob
Flair is doing?
The members, the things that you just were going to are listed, are all of those people public with every person that they're paying and where all of their funding sources are from?
Because
it sounded earlier, you said people would be more excited to join these programs, but Chorus seems like the largest one of them.
Yeah, well, Chorus was the first out of the gate. So a lot of those other programs haven't launched yet, and they're launching now. And so that's why we want to get these discussions going and say, hey guys, look, Chorus is first mover in the space. They're definitely the biggest and the most notable. They got that splashy New York Times profile 10 days after the election. But now that all the donors are so invested in investing in media, why don't you listen to, you know, some of these creators themselves and do it in a little bit more of an open and transparent way? I don't think it's going to hurt them the way that they think that it will. I think it'll actually help them. And if you listen to that great piece on The Verge between Tina and Mia, I think that they make a very compelling argument for transparency.
Okay. I hope that transparency is a thing we can all push for, especially in the media environment. I think it's one of the most damaging things right now in the United States is not having that transparency. So, yeah.
And if people want to learn more about dark money, go watch the video that I made with Anna on my YouTube channel. I think she answers a lot of questions. And she also herself is very open to receiving questions and feedback. And if you have further questions, I know she would love to hear from people.
Gotcha. Cool. All right. Well, hey, listen, thanks. I know I'm here to kind of bully you and shout at you. So I appreciate the conversation
for
like an hour and a half. So yeah, thanks a lot.
Happy to chat. Always happy to chat about my reporting. Thank you guys so much for reading and engaging with my work. And if you have a story that you want me to cover, just reach out.
Cool. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Thanks. Bye.